the three groups that interact or have members on each other's boards
right.
are the Central Conference right. of American Rabbis, the Hebrew Union College, and the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. Okay.
It's a task of the president of the Central Conference. In a sense, the others are more practical and more focused on a very specific item or agenda. So it's often the task of the president of the Central Conference to look at things in a somewhat broader way. One of the things I tried to stress, particularly to the Union of American Hebrew Congregations during these years, was the need for boundaries. That, all right, we're a liberal movement, but that doesn't mean that anything goes. That we need to say no as often as we say yes, which didn't always go down all that well. The other thing that's necessary is because the organizations are so different. You know, the union has a large budget and all sorts of ramifications, runs camps and so on, has regional directors, and publishes books, and does television programs and the like. And the college has four campuses, three in this country, one in Israel. The president of the Central Conference, which runs on a very small budget is done largely through volunteers, often has to sort of step in and say, look, that doesn't matter. We have as much of a voice in all this as the rest of you folks.
You mentioned pensions and the lack thereof. When did pensions become part of the rabbi's total package? And how did it come about?
It came about in the 40s when it was clear that there was a need for this. I think largely because of the great expansion of congregations the fact that rabbis were, as everybody else in America, more mobile than before. And so the chances of yours, let's say, serving two congregations for your whole life, and then the second one, because you'd been there for 25, 30 years, feeling a sense of responsibility for taking care of you, were going to be diminished if you had instead been with, let's say, four or five congregations. And so the thought was that from the very beginning, every congregation would put a certain percentage of the salary into a general fund, which would be centrally managed. And that meant that even if a rabbi moved, he would not find himself or herself suddenly in trouble. And that whole system is again a joint system run by the Central Conference and the Union of American Hebrew Congregations.
Can we change the subject?
Of course.
Last week, you mentioned that one of the groups that uses this facility is the Reconstruction Movement. Is that how you say it?
Reconstructionist Movement.
Yes. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, our thoughts as far as the use of the building goes
we've
always been hospitable
right.
to all kinds of groups. The Reconstructionist Movement is a liberal Jewish group which sits, you might say, between the conservative movement and the reform movement in practice. In theory, it is in some ways more radical than the reform movement. Its founder, Mordecai Kaplan, for example, wanted to remove the thought of being a chosen people. And so the Torah blessings and so on reflect that. His whole approach as far as God goes was not exactly humanist, but he put much more emphasis on the people rather than on anything divine. But most Reconstructionist members have sort of lost those theological matters. And it's now a liberal movement, small liberal movement, with its own seminary, which is established maybe 20 years ago in Philadelphia.
Is the course of study similar, I mean, as intense as other disciplines, other rabbinic disciplines?
It's comparable.
Yeah.
They've had troubles with standards. So we will almost automatically, if somebody from the conservative movement wants to join the Central Conference, we will almost automatically accept them. If somebody from the Leo Beck Seminary in London wants to join us, we will automatically accept them. The Reconstructionist movement, we will look at them one candidate at a time.
And this is an American movement?
Yes.
Does it exist in other countries?
No, it doesn't.
Now, this is a funny question. Do you, as a rabbi, as a Reformed rabbi, with your standards, with the Central Conference of American Rabbis, do you accept them as Jews?
Oh, sure. Nobody would hesitate about accepting them as Jews.
Yeah.
What we talked about a moment ago was, are we willing to take their rabbis in automatically into the Central Conference? The answer is no. We'll look at them one at a time, and maybe in some instances say, before you can join us, you have to take these and these courses and show that you are proficient in these and these areas.
Can you elaborate on the Leo Beck Institute?
The Leo Beck College in London is now 25 years old. It was an effort to establish a seminary, a Reformed seminary in Europe, which succeeded. And as it is in London, it has, through its graduates, seen to it that the Reform movement in England, or, you know, in England there are two Reform movements, liberal and Reform, and so and the points of difference are really very minor. But those groups were peripheral up to the end of the Second World War. Now they are 40% of English Jewry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
40%?
Yes, and growing rapidly. And the Leo Beck College also trains rabbis for the rest of Europe, liberal rabbis. Of course, that means you have to know English. There are now, I think, 5 students from the former Soviet Union, 3 from the Ukraine, and 2 from somewhere else. There are 2 from Germany, and possibly also 1 or 2 from France. Whether that will, you know, English ends up being the major language, but whether, when those movements grow, they'll probably establish seminaries in their own, with their own language groups in their own countries, but that's still a ways off.
Are there other Reformed seminaries any other place in the world?
Well, there's one in Israel, which
yeah.
is a branch of the Hebrew Union
right.
College, but which also trains rabbis for the local Israeli rabbinate. So aside from students from here spending a year in Israel.
That's compulsory.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are about 25, 30 Israelis studying for the rabbinate there in Jerusalem. There is a liberal seminary, but it's really conservative, at least in its with its ties. I'm not sure how far beyond that goes, in Buenos Aires.
How about Australia and New
Zealand? There aren't enough Jews there. There are about 100,000 Jews in total.
So where are they trained? In England? Or here?
In either place.
Okay. 100,000 Jews in Australia?
Mm-hmm.
How about South Africa?
South Africa is a a Jewish community that's diminishing. I mean, American Reform rabbis have served in Australia, in South Africa, in South America, in Israel, in Europe. So those are all trained by at the Hebrew Union College. But South Africa, that's a diminishing number of people.
Now, back to the Central Congress. You are now past president.
Well, now two removed.
Two removed. Yeah. So are you still on the board? Or?
No, for the years after your presidency, you continue on the board to try to help along with a smooth transition and to just generally help. But after that, no. And I've also tried to do the same thing there as I'm doing here, which is to back off so that the next person can really have a feeling that they are doing what they want to do without any interference.
Now, you talked about change. there's change all over, of course. You talked about change during your tenure of the Central Conference. How about change at the Hebrew Union College, especially the new chairman there?
Both the Hebrew Union, you're talking about the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. Rabbi Jaffe replaced Rabbi Schindler. Okay. And at the Hebrew Union College, Rabbi Zimmerman replaced Rabbi Gottschall. We'll talk about both of those.
Okay.
It is at this point probably still a bit unclear and premature to say exactly what changes Rabbi Jaffe will bring to the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. Under Rabbi Schindler, there was a tremendous expansion of, first of all, the number of Reform congregations, and then also the programming of camps and institutes. There are, I think, six or seven camps for children and for teenagers and young adults scattered around the country. And then also what he emphasized was a major outreach movement to those who are not Jews but married to Jews. And he put a tremendous amount of energy into that as well as other matters, and very successfully. He also served for a while as the president of the, I totally forgot about to mention that earlier, of the organization of Jewish presidents. As president of the Central Conference, you're part of that too, the presidents of major organizations. So you meet at various times to make decisions that are public policy decisions, how to represent yourself as Jews to either the American government or some other government. So during my years, there were, of course, meetings here and meetings in Israel, and I attended those, and efforts still to help Soviet Jews. And this was a time of transition for that, and to get involved with that. So he played a key role in that as president of that organization. His successor is, first of all, realigning some of the priorities. There'll probably be more emphasis on education, on revamping some of the religious school curricula, on doing more with day schools, Reform Jewish day schools, and on using modern technology, which was just beginning to be used, in other words, the internet, CD-ROMs, and so on, which make possible things that before this were extremely difficult or expensive. I think those are some of the directions he's going to take.
Now, this is Rabbi Jaffe.
Jaffe.
Right.
Yes. And And Rabbi Zimmerman at the Hebrew Union College, that's the three American campuses have, or let's start with his predecessor. Rabbi Gottschalk succeeded in building up these campuses, seeing to it that they have good modern buildings, and also seeing to it that the Israeli campus, which is a magnificent set of buildings, was built and properly staffed and library put into place and all of that. And on the West Coast, not that much needed to be done for the college there, the Hebrew Union College, but the Center for the American Jewish Experience, which is a large museum and research complex, quite close or really at the on the same road as the what is that major museum by the richest
Getty?
The richest museum in America, and they have some associations too. So he put that into place. He built a new building for the New York School, close to New York University. So he really was an individual who, first of all, built and rebuilt the institutions, and secondly, saw to it that they have reasonable endowments, which is always a problem. Now what needs to be done, and what Rabbi Zimmerman, I'm sure, will do, is to expand some of the programs that are non-rabbinic. We've been training a lot of Jewish social workers and a lot of individuals to lead social work agencies.
Within the college?
Yes.
That's interesting.
So that these people have a much better Jewish background. You know, up to now, the person may have been financially capable, have a lot of people skills, but really not know too much beyond that.
Can I ask a question? These social workers, for instance, would they take their whole program at the Hebrew Union College, or is it in connection with
It would
with
be in
another?
Conjunction with, yeah. with one of the other universities, wherever they happen to be. And then also to expand the range of educators so that that becomes a field that we have both better people and a larger variety of people. And then there again is the whole issue of ongoing education, which is done in conjunction with the Central Conference, but which now can be done to a fair extent on the internet, and so it can reach out much further. I suppose those are going to be, those and other things like them, are going to be on his agenda. I'm sure there'll be some curricular changes, but those are, you might say, ongoing.
That's Rabbi Zimmerman.
Yes. There's slight, and there's always a struggle, and I certainly have a strong position on one side of that, between the practical and the academic. And I feel very strongly that what needs to be emphasized is the academic. Practical, if you want to pick up skills in counseling, you can always do that later.
How about the music? There's a cantorial school.
Yes, that's functioning very well.
At each campus?
Only in the New York. Yes. There is, some music, of course, taught in the other campuses, mm-hmm. too. But you can't really replicate all these things everywhere. And in New York, you have a large body of instructors for the practical side.
So these singers would also have their singing skills developed at the music school.
Yes.
And the chanting, whatever.
Yeah, and learn, and besides that, they are expected to have a pretty good Jewish background and to be able to deal with the texts and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are your feelings on Jewish day schools?
I think Jewish day schools are something that we ought to pursue, and I hope we eventually pursue it here. I tried in the last couple of years to move us in that direction. But it proved to be a difficult, largely, I suppose, because Chuck Dechter died, and that meant that in the next year or year and a half, a lot, you know, the next president had to take over suddenly and was busy with other things. And then we also had now had the transition of the rabbis. So it proved difficult to really push hard in that direction. But I think a city like Pittsburgh should have a reformed Jewish day school to provide a solid Jewish education and do that in a way that is not ancillary for those people who want it. I don't think it should ever be a program that lasts through all the years of schooling, because I think it's important that you continue to have constant contact with non-Jews. We are, after all, a minority.
So how far would you go?
Well, probably to the middle school or through the middle school. It's also beyond that, often almost impossible financially, because if you want to offer any choice of subjects on the high school level, it's either going to be very expensive or it's going to be very poor. And I think whatever is done, that kind of a program has to be a first-class program.
Are there successful Jewish day schools in other cities in the U.S.?
Well, you have Hillel here.
That's not reform.
Yeah. There are about 20 reform Jewish day schools, maybe 25, scattered in North America. And yes, they are successful, and they are at various levels. You know, some will go to the fourth or fifth grade, not beyond. Some will go to the eighth grade, not beyond. And I've inspected some of those in an effort to move in that direction, sometimes with magnificent facilities, and sometimes with lesser facilities, What it takes, really, to get it going is an endowment, because you want to make sure that you're able to subsidize something like this for the first years till it manages more or less to maintain itself. Probably will never entirely, because you always want to be in a position to have people who need scholarships. And I had started to move in that direction, but then found that it was there wasn't that much support from at least a segment of the leadership of the congregation, and I did not want to leave Rabbi Stateman in a position where it might have been embarrassing. So I started in an effort to, with a group of people who were interested. And who indicated that they would give or help raise a series of six-figure gifts. And that if you went to the board and said, you know, we have $800,000, now let's talk about this outside of the realm of finances, just on a theoretical level. But I decided not to push in that direction because I would not have been able to complete the path. And it isn't fair to leave your successor with something that's half done.
How does he feel about it?
He's interested. I don't think it's his first priority. His first priority clearly is to get, and that's happening now, the nursery school and the daycare. But, of course, from the nursery school, that's a good base in which you can then build year by year and move in that direction, and he may very well go in that direction.
Now, the nursery school now is viable. Wasn't there a little problem at one
No,
point?
There was no problem.
It wasn't the Jewish focus?
Well, the problem was a few years ago, there was, before we had three rabbis, we really didn't, the two of us, didn't have time to spend in the nursery school. And it takes somebody to go in there on a regular basis, either a rabbi or a Jewish teacher. So with the coming of Rabbi Pine, that part of it was settled. You know, the non-Jews who were part of the school never minded the fact that the kids were singing Hanukkah songs or whatever. The problem in the last 2 years, and that's why we're making a change, is that this school that's here now is associated with us, but is not our school. And we wanted to have more control over the curriculum and also tied more closely to a membership in the congregation so that it's more a service to our members and incidentally also available to the outside, but that the focus be in that direction. And that's happening, and I'm sure that'll go very well.
Can I ask a few questions about the school? Where do your poor teachers come for religious school? Where are these teachers trained?
Okay. If you're dealing with a Reform Jewish day school, then of course you need teachers who are both qualified in a general curriculum and Jewishly. And there are such individuals in the community for whom you would have to have changed their position from a secular school or one of the private schools to this school. So that's perfectly possible. What's more difficult, or has become more difficult in the last decade or decade and a half, is to properly staff the part-time religious school. We've got a very good staff for the Hebrew program, and many people who have been around for a long time, and who also have a good understanding of children and the ability to deal with them well. So the afternoon program has always been in good shape. But the morning program, Sunday morning, is tougher because public school teachers who used to staff those positions in the past are now sufficiently well paid that they don't need that. And many of them would prefer to have a Sunday morning off and not have that additional obligation. So we have two sets of people. People who do this principally for the love of it. And the fact that they're getting paid is really incidental. And a second group who are college students or graduate students, usually the products of our youth groups or some other little or high school training in other Reform congregations. And the issue there is, of course, twofold. One is you have a large turnover. These kids, you know, they'll eventually, hopefully, graduate, and that's the end. And secondly, that they are not necessarily either well prepared from a pedagogic point of view or from the point of view of Jewish content. And so you have a continual effort to train teachers. And as nobody is willing to pay people sufficiently to make it worth their while to get up on Sunday morning and to do this year after year, we'll be left with that problem. You know, you've got a core of people who do it because they want to do it, and another group that is here because they need the spending money. They're not necessarily highly motivated to study on their own either.
It's a problem then.
It's always been to some extent a problem, but it's become more acute in the last 15 years. And the result is that even with the best of will, you will always have some problems with a part-time school. See, the other thing is that that's one set of issues. The other is the frustrations that are built into this, because you have a fair number of parents for whom this is a low priority. So if the family decides to go skiing on a weekend, kids are not there. Or for some other, or it's out late the night before, either parents or children, and so they don't show up. That means that if you've got a class of 15, 20 kids, and three or four are not here this week, and three or four different kids are not here next week, it's just difficult to march through a curriculum. And you want to do it in such a way that you don't penalize those people who do come and bore them. On the other hand, you don't want the people who come on a more irregular basis to be totally lost. That takes a lot of skill. Mm-hmm. And not every teacher is going to have that skill. And not every teacher is going to have the...